Log Talk Hello. Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Hello, everybody.
Yo. What up, man?
What's good? What's up?
Not much.
This is another episode of The Menu going on. What's going on, Brother B?
Not much. Yeah, man. Another episode of The Menu on Blog Talk Radio. Big Red Brother B in the house. Bill.
We in the house.
Bill. Hope all is well with everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, man. Catch us on Facebook, The Menu. Mind Your Mental, MindURMENTAL. Catch at least me on Instagram, Brother B74, DROTHVA _. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, something like that. On Instagram. Yeah, I'm sorry, man. I'm all over the place. But yeah, you catch on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram, The Menu. Mind Your Mental, MindURMENTAL. Yeah, man.
Yes.
How you doing?
We in here. I'm good. Just, you know, chilling, maintaining. Hope everybody's good out there. Just trying to, you know, see what's going on out here in this world of ours.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm just kind of in the middle of, you know, different thoughts right now. I know you kind of go from one extreme to the next, from, you know, our topic from last week to the topic this week. But, you know, you got to keep it a variety. You can't always talk about relationships, sex, and, you know, other things all the time. You know, we got to, you know, put some real life, real world issues, you know,
right,
up for discussion. And,
right,
you know, it is what it is. You know, choose to join it. You know, cool. If not, you know, all the best to you still. So, once again, it is Big Red and Brother B, another episode of The Menu on Blog Talk Radio. Guest calling numbers 347-324-3395. That is 347-324-3395.
95, yeah, man.
So, yeah. Yeah, let's just not beat around the bush and get straight into it. Tonight's topic, will we ever breathe?
Right.
You know, to those who are wondering, you know, where that, you know, title came about. Because, you know, it's not only the thing that Eric Garner said, that he was being choked by, at that time, currently, NYPD officer. But it was the same thing that was said by George Floyd, as he had a cop's knee on his neck for about 8 minutes and 46 seconds.
Right.
You know, if I may say, because I know you've been watching the trial more than I have.
Yes.
And you know, I'm just not really big or into TV or whatever, but I damn sure, you know, don't want to see that trial. It's sad that we live in a world that people want to make excuses for the killing of someone of color. But when it comes down to killing someone of non-color, it's treated as a heinous act. It's just deplorable. It's
right.
A very derogatory term.
And they don't demonize the person. They don't demonize the person like they're doing George Floyd.
Well, you just had someone shoot up some Asians and shoot up a supermarket, and they're not demonizing them, but you'll demonize the victim.
Right.
Because he's black, and, you know, that's the narrative of the media, but that's the narrative of the system in general. That's the narrative of a lot of people because it makes them feel comfortable knowing that, oh, another druggie is off the street. How do you know he was on drugs? I didn't know him personally. There were reports. There were reports, but I didn't know him personally. So who am I to judge? That's number one. Number two, he was a father. He was someone's husband. He was someone's brother. But none of that matters to you at all because people get caught up in their feelings so much of hatred. And don't try to say it's not hate. Would you want to throw the little bigot word, so he's a little bigoty or something like that? No, it's hate. It is what it is. Like, you know what? I think people need to really just get up, look in the mirror, and see how much of a hateful, spiteful, and maybe just a low-down human being they are when you can actually try to justify someone. Forget the fact that he's a cop. Because, you know, some people just take these jobs just so they can, like, you know, they can live out their dreams of just, like, being tough and kicking somebody's ass and the law has their back. But you have to be a piece of shit, a real low-down person, to try to justify someone killing someone else senselessly, not in self-defense, just senselessly. And just because he was a police officer, that doesn't change the fact. There was no self. He didn't have to defend himself against George Floyd. George Floyd didn't attack anyone. The man was accused of having a counterfeit $20 bill. I don't think that warranted death. But apparently, someone else had something else in mind. Now, this Derek Chauvin dude, I think his how he felt or who he is, it's bigger than the badge. I think he was just a piece of shit in general. I think he was just a low-life human who probably took the job as a police officer so he can do the things they do. He probably was a punk. He's more likely he's a punk. And it's sad because, you know, sometimes you do have punks from high school that take these jobs. And then they want to be all tough when they jump and throw on the badge and the uniform because it's some type of validation. And it's not all, because you know what? Some people do it because they want to help the community. Some people just do it for a job. But some people do it to make a difference. And I respect that. But if you're a sucker and you're looking for power and you take these jobs like this, then you're still a sucker. You're still a coward. It doesn't mean anything. You have heart in numbers. You have heart because you feel there's somebody that has your back. You have heart because there's a system that will not go against what you say because you took this oath. And you're supposed to be held to a higher standard. You're still trash. If you're going out there doing stuff like Derek Chauvin or what is his name, Danny Pantiello, the one that did the illegal chokehold on Eric Garner. You're still trash. You're still a coward. You're still a punk. It's interesting how I see these signs, Blue Lives Matter. Blue Lives, there's no such thing as Blue Lives. It's a fucking job. So stop it.
Right.
Like someone once told me, once a cop, twice a civilian. So think about that. If you have to take the identity of being a police officer and that's who you are, then that's sad. Because then that means you have no other type of worth but that uniform, but that badge. That's all you are, and that's all you will ever be. And that's it. But if that's who you are, then that's who you are. But don't go out there, you know, with defensiveness. I mean, there are people out there, yeah, who do wrong, but there are also people that do right. And like I said, George Floyd didn't have to happen. It was disgusting. We all saw it. We all saw the video. We all saw what he was doing. The man was begging for his life, saying he can't breathe, asking, talking about his mother, who was deceased. But yet you had no, this guy had no compassion.
Well,
whatsoever.
Actually. Well, like I said, I've been watching that trial, and I'm just going to say, well, when you're saying the mama, well, from what I'm hearing of what I say, I mean, from what I've seen, his girlfriend nickname was, that he called her, was Mama. So now they were saying that when he was calling out Mama, like I said, I don't know if he was necessarily calling out his mama, or maybe that's what it was, but now they're saying that, you know, it's a possibility that he was calling her.
What does it matter?
Because that's who he was with, huh?
That's what I'm saying. What does it matter?
Yeah, and
well,
it really doesn't matter.
Like these little things right here, you know what I'm saying?
Well, you ain't heard nothing yet.
Yeah, I know. These little intricacies, you know, sorry, 6947, we're going to get to you in a second. The thing is, these little things, it doesn't matter. It still doesn't take away the fact that this man chose to put his knee on another neck of another human being. For what reason? Like I said, he was already handcuffed. What was the reason?
Okay, so let me tell you this. Now, like I said, I've been following this trial, and you know, like I said, I usually don't follow, like, big trial. I think the last time I followed anything was, I think, was O.J. Simpson. So this was something that was, like, I had to do it because I'm like, you know what, I want to see what this defense lawyer is going to try to say that can justify what he did. And the questioning that they have for everyone, the witnesses and everything else. Now, I'm going to tell you the latest. Now, what they're trying to do is the young man named that was with him in the car the day that they got arrested, or he got, George Floyd got arrested, and I guess they were trying to arrest him as well. His name is, let me skip 1 minute, the guy name is Maurice Hall, right?
Okay.
So now this morning they had a motion trial. So now they're trying to basically he wanted to testify, but now he doesn't want to testify. I'll just put it like simple. He doesn't really want to testify because when he was in the car with George Floyd, he was supposedly selling drugs to him and people or whatever, selling some type of pills or something like that, right? So now, it's a thing of if he goes on that stand and says what he says, they are going to get at him. You understand what I'm saying? Plus, that's what they're trying to push very hard, that, oh, well, George Floyd was in drugs. He had a pill in his mouth. He had drugs in his system, this, that, and so you know what? That's the reason why he passed away. It had nothing to do with the knee on the neck. It wasn't that. But then the young man, Maurice Hall, he feels that he's going to incriminate him. So if he says anything, and you know what? That's the sad part about it. If he's trying to, you know, wants to say something or wants to tell what happened, but, you know, he's kind of in the red because if he says anything, then guess what? They're going to, once again, they're going to go after him. Next thing you know, he's going to be sitting in jail. You understand what I'm saying?
Got you. And before we go to 6947, and I didn't forget about you, the caller 1111. I just have to say real quick, I get it. But to say that he was on drugs, he had a pill in his mouth, and did that cause his death? Did the drugs?
That's what they're trying to say.
Just because you're on drugs, if it didn't immediately cause his death, then you can't say that that was the reason why he died. Like, listen,
right.
I take asthma medicine, but if somebody puts their knee on my neck for 8 minutes and 40-something seconds, what you're going to say, oh, well, he died because he was asthmatic. Well, maybe my asthma wouldn't have triggered if you didn't have your knee on my neck. But anyway, 6947, you're on the empty menu. What's going on?
Hi, guys. How you guys doing?
What's up, Michelle?
Hi, hello. Hi. Hi.
So, hello.
Yeah.
I had never watched the video until the trial started, and I've been watching the trial every day. And I think in order to discuss it, we have to be kind of really honest about what we saw. I don't know if everybody has been watching it continuously, but Big Red, what you just said about, I guess they're calling him his friend that was in the car. When I watched the video, they started it from when he first went into the store and he tried to pass,
right.
You know, the counterfeit or whatever happened. It was obvious his friend was dealing drugs. It was obvious his friend was dealing drugs to him. As soon as I saw the guy come in, I'm like, oh, my goodness, look at this. I don't know what setup they had. So we just really have to address the facts of what we saw. But do I think that him taking that pill caused his death? Absolutely not. Because we also saw the police walk up aggressively with their guns drawn to tell him to get out the car. They didn't walk up to him and say, you know, the guns were drawn. They were aggressive walking up to the car. He got out of the car. They handcuffed him, and he was walking casually. You know, he sat down casually. They picked him back up. He walked across the street. Then they tried to get him in the car. He was like, claustrophobic. He was like, I can't breathe. And at that point, they tried to force him in. And he was, you know, screaming, I can't breathe or whatever have you. And they got him in the car. And then I think the confusion happened to why they needed to pull him back out. But in looking at the trial, I was going to say the first couple of days, I was just so sad. Like, I couldn't – it was heartbreaking. The last two days, not so much. The thing that broke my heart was the little girl and the older cousin and little girl talking about how what they witnessed. And I'm like, our kids can't even go to the grocery store to go get some candy and snacks without coming up and seeing somebody that looks like them thrown on the ground and murdered. And when I first heard about the trial, I automatically assumed, oh, white cop, black guy, it's racial. I have to tell you, I don't think this is racial at all. I think he is just, like you said, first of all, I don't think it's the first person he's abused. I think he has a record. I think he actually has like a couple of, about 7 or 8 charges against him for over-policing and, you know, things like that. So he's been the type of person where he's been in a position unchecked, and the amount of violence that he's used has been increasing and increasing. Probably somebody that nobody likes on the force, in the street, just the type of person that got the badge and used it for power because he probably was powerless growing up. But I didn't see it as racial at all. I just think he has a killer mentality. And unfortunately, this time, he's been doing this all along, but this time it went too far. It went too far, and he did not have the discernment to know when to stop, regardless of. You know, my personal feeling, Chow is just as guilty as him because he stopped. It would kind of be like when you're committing a crime and somebody helps you to commit the crime. That's what happens when you stop people from assisting someone that's dying. And he abused his authority also. So you have a lot of things going on. But I think the real crux of this is, are they going to hold the police accountable? And the problem is if they hold them accountable now, going forward, it's going to be a precedent. So that's going to allow every citizen to get up there and sue a police officer for brutality. And now that I think there was a law that was passed a couple of months ago saying that you can go after their personal assets. They are no longer covered. They no longer have immunity. So that's why it's being watched so closely, because this is going to determine whether or not you can go after them personally and that you can go after their personal assets.
All right, caller 111, you're on the air with the menu. What's up? 4600, I ain't forget about you.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I suspect we're not going to agree about much with regard to this case, But I would like
sir, your name.
Yeah.
Your name, please.
Oh, you can call me Larry.
How you doing, Mr. Larry?
I'm doing fine, sir. I hope you're doing well also.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
But I would like to preface my remarks by, you know, my counter remarks by saying what I think we can agree about and then go into the things that I vigorously disagree about. First of all, I think more likely than not, Derek Chauvin should not have been a police officer. He should either not have been hired or should have been fired at some point. And I agree also that had George Floyd not been arrested that day, he more likely than not would not have died that day. But due to other factors, he probably would have died soon. But that's neither here nor there, I understand. What it is that he certainly wouldn't have died that day. Okay, I'm going to give everybody that. Beyond that, not much. Because this is why. Because I believe in the rule of law, as best as it be, imperfectly carried out by human beings, it'll never be perfect. Never, never, never. No endeavor by human beings will ever be perfect. And that includes the rule of law, even when they try to their very best to do it. And half the time, they don't try their very best. But since that is the standard to aspire to, I believe in the absolute necessity of the state being required to prove every element of the offense that a defendant is charged with beyond a reasonable doubt. And that's what disturbs me about what I'm hearing in a lot of things about this case. Now, I saw yesterday the Minneapolis police chief admit, or rather agree with the defense, that when you look at a couple of different camera angles that were shown on screen, simultaneously occurring but from different angles, the issue of camera perspective bias is a very real probability, with so many people believing that he had his knee on the man's neck for the full 8 minutes. You know, we know camera perspective bias exists because we see it in movies all the time. It looks like the actor's punching another guy in the face. It's very convincing, particularly when you add in the sound effects, but their fists are maybe a foot away from the actual chin of the guy that gets hit. It's all in the camera angles. And they were able to show quite convincingly that there is room for reasonable doubt as to the length of time, if any, he had his knee on his neck. Now, I know that people who are all for Derek Chauvin being convicted are supposed to believe in science. There are always good people on the right who are conservative or not believing in science. Well, here's some science for you that these people don't even want to seem to give, well, they seem to give short shrift to. That is a blood, drug, and novel psychoactive substance screen that shows 11 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl. Now, why is that important? Because deaths can normally be considered to reasonably occur with 3 nanograms per milliliter of fentanyl in your bloodstream. This guy didn't have enough fentanyl just to kill a horse. He had enough fentanyl in his bloodstream to kill a team of Clydesdales. I mean, and acting so that was utterly, completely, totally, absolutely irrelevant to any possible cause of death. The only thing you're allowed to consider is the knee allegedly on his neck, which may not have been on his neck for 8 minutes. You're also supposed to ignore the fact that the autopsy report showed his lungs weighed 3 times the normal weight. They were full of fluid. In other words, he was having edema, pulmonary edema. It's like he drowned in his own bodily fluids. Why? Because he had an edema caused on probably by the fact that he had coronary heart disease, arterial sclerosis, and the adrenaline you could see was in a pure panic from being arrested. He went into excited delirium, and all that cortisone and other stress factors flowing in his bloodstream undoubtedly contributed to heart failure and or respiratory failure. And he was foaming at the mouth before he got on the ground. He said he told the officer he'd been hooping that day, and that don't mean playing basketball. It's got a new term in the Urban Dictionary. Go look it up. So all of these things together, I'm not saying this guy is innocent. Hell, I don't know if he's innocent. I do believe he should have been a police officer. All this other stuff. But look, there is room for reasonable doubt, and there's certainly room to get at least one juror hung on this. The reason they didn't allow a lot of his prior bad acts to be introduced into him at trial is because it is a very high bar in a trial to admit prior bad acts unless there is direct nexus to the prior bad act and the act for which the person is on trial for. I mean, it's got to be real tight. Usually they don't allow it. I'm saying all this here because I was a Illinois State policeman for 26 years. I worked most of my time in Cook County in Chicago. I've seen people die. I've seen people die from pulmonary edema. Plus, I was a combat veteran of 3 wars. I've seen people die there, too. I've seen a lot of deaths. And I've heard people crying for their mama, too. Although this guy had, like the lady pointed out prior, he had a girl, one of his girlfriend acquaintances listed his mama in his phone book, on his phone. I don't know what he's actually calls his mother, if he's calling his girlfriend. I don't know. But again, you know, that is, as she said, that's not really relevant. He's not being tried for that. He's being tried for first, second-degree murder. Now, I'm not saying he's not guilty of anything in this case. Aggravated battery, perhaps, for the length of time he was on the guy's neck, whether it caused his death or not, okay. But first and second-degree murder, given the circumstances of this that can induce a reasonable doubt, I just don't think they're going to meet that bar.
Larry, can I say something real quick? I just want to address two things you said. You talked about the angle of the camera, and it's funny because I noticed it when I was watching it. Do you notice that when they showed the angle of the camera and they kept referencing, I think, Chauvin having his knee on his shoulder, that you also saw the hand of the paramedic on his neck? So that was way after the fact. That was after the paramedics had arrived, got out of the car, and then checked him. So he was technically on his neck for a long time. And the paramedic also mentioned that he had to tell the police officers to move. So that timeline is actually kind of accurate. The second thing is there are three different charges. You have murder 1 and 2 and manslaughter. And since you're a police officer, you know the difference between the three. So the level of proof that they need is going to vary. He is guilty. He is guilty. It's just a matter of charging him with the right thing and getting a conviction.
It really is. And the reason, remember now, they had excluded third-degree murder first. The prosecution wasn't going for it. But then when they started to realize the case to some extent was beginning to fall apart under the weight of new evidence, they wanted to have third-degree murder reintroduced so they could have a fallback, because I don't think they're going to meet the bar for first and second. I just don't. I think at least one juror is going to hang the jury, at least, if not an outright acquittal on those two charges.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you. I think it's because of the makeup of the jury. It's the makeup of the jury. The people right now, they're trying to humanize them because as you're talking, everybody focuses on what did he do to deserve this. We're not necessarily looking at Chauvin and saying Chauvin did this, he did this. We're saying, well, look at George Floyd. He had fentanyl in him. He had this, he did that. So you're focusing
right,
on the
right, it's like he's on trial
and coming up with a reason.
Yeah. No.
Yeah,
those who remember, no, he's not on trial. The defendant is. And remember, his freedom is at stake,
not
George Floyd. Can't do nothing for him now.
Yeah, I know.
George,
but
the defendant's freedom is at stake. He gets to introduce everything relevant to his case. Was he the cause of the man's death? And is it reasonable to assume that a police officer is supposed to have a person's medical chart when you're required to use force in order to arrest a resistant suspect? It isn't. You can't have a medical chart of somebody. And like, yeah, I think the guy had his knee on his shoulder or his neck, whatever it was, for too long. Charge him with the appropriate offense in this case. But first and second degree murder, just I don't think it's going to cut it.
So you said you're an officer for over 20 years. You don't know the difference between you fighting someone, pulling them out the car, and them going limp underneath you?
Well, hold on, I definitely know the difference. I don't have any medical background. Well, hold on. I haven't killed anybody either. I gotta
give somebody else a chance.
Oh, yeah, 4600, you're on the air with the menu. What's up?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight? Yeah.
What's going on?
You know, I hate to see Mr. Floyd lose his life too, but he was living a way that was detrimental to his life. Apparently he didn't seem to need to care about it. Not only dealing with drugs, but other activities he was doing in his porn career. Now, I think myself that characterization should be brought up, because whenever I've seen times in courts where the judge was getting ready to hand down the sentence, and he allowed people who wanted to come and speak for a light sentence, they would give character reference to the person that was about ready to be sentenced, about how he worked in the community, Boy Scout leader, and so on, so on, so on. So should not character reference be applied both ways?
So then they're negating the simple fact that he actually tried to clean up his life. They're negating this.
Yeah,
so
but you're going to negate that. Listen, I didn't call to argue with you, ma'am.
I'm not arguing with you. So let me say what I got to say, please. I'm the one that's calling in.
All right, hold on. Wait a minute. Wait, one at a time. Come on. You can't do this.
Now,
like,
here's the thing. Whether he's trying to clean up his life or not, he's still done these things. Cleaning up your life doesn't mean that you go continue to be indulged on drugs and continue to do things which is hyperbole when it goes to passing currency.
But
that
does not mean that you're cleaning up your life.
Now, one other thing.
Sir, can I ask you
a
question? Real quick. So let's say you had some indiscretions and you were cleaning up your life. You were cleaning up your life. And something from your past came to get you. Do you really think that you – now, remember, you're on this journey. You're on this path of cleaning up your life. You're trying to do the right thing. It just so happens karma comes back. But did it mean you have – did you deserve it? Do you think you really deserved it, depending on what the outcome was? See, the whole thing is this. Why are we sitting here making passing judgment or talking about what he did in the past or what was in his system? That has nothing to do. If he wanted to self-destruct, that is his business and his God-given right. What wasn't Derek Chauvin's God-given right was to do what he did to that man, to cause his death. Because you can't sit there,
you can't sit there and say
that he just would have died just walking the street. We don't know, but we know one thing, that knee on his neck, or on his shoulder, or wherever it was that was causing that asphyxiation that triggered everything else to happen, it wouldn't have happened if it wasn't for that knee. There you go.
I also think we're blaming the victim. We're looking at the reasons why at his life. He's not on trial. He's the one that's gone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Focus on Chauvin.
Yeah, exactly. He's not on trial. Chauvin is. That's why he gets to introduce everything that's pertinent to his defense. George Floyd is not on trial. Everything you're saying would be factors in mitigation if Floyd was on trial. Chauvin is. We're trying to take his freedom from him.
Exactly. It would be accurate if George Floyd was on trial for murder, but that's not the case. So what he does in his personal life, it might have added to it. Like you said, I think they said that he was literally choked to death. He couldn't breathe for that reason. And it might have been exacerbated with the fact that he was high on drugs or whatever have you. But like you said, he was walking in and out the store high. And he didn't fall down. And he wasn't, you know, out of breath and I can't breathe. And he was up and down, in and out the car. We all saw that. So we do have to place blame where blame is, and we have to look at the facts. I think what the defense is doing right now is distracting. He did exactly kind of what you did. He's so busy focusing on what George Floyd did and could have done that is distracting from what Chauvin did.
Right.
But again, I'm saying that it's pertinent to his defense. The cause of death is directly pertinent to his guilt. He is absolutely, absolutely allowed to introduce doubt as to the cause of his death. People are saying, the prosecutors are saying that his knee caused his death, to almost the exclusion of everything else. He gets to counter with convincing medical examiner evidence. Remember, the medical examiner found no evidence of damage to his airway, to his trachea, or to the soft, even bruising on the soft muscles in the neck, the tissue around the neck. None, zero. All of this would be pertinent as to what killed the man. And when you combine it with the levels of coronary disease, the fact that his lungs weighed three times the normal amount, they were filled with fluid, The fact that he had foam coming out of his mouth, that he complained about not being able to breathe before he was taken to the ground, the fact that he was in a high state of panic. If you watch the whole 20-something minutes of that video, I mean, he was utterly hysterical. He
but
was clearly stressed. The adrenaline had to be flowing like a river in his bloodstream.
You know,
and when you've got, remember the police officer that asked him about excited delirium? Excited delirium is very real.
Well,
it can cause
like
death in and of
itself, even
in a healthy person.
It sounds like a fancy word for fear.
Yeah, and even that could cause death in a healthy person. To say nothing of a guy with three times the normally fatal level of fentanyl, along with a whole bunch of drugs like norfentanyl, ANPP, methamphetamine, cannabinoids, amphetamines, and morphine. He had all of those drugs in his bloodstream. It is directly pertinent to ask what was the cause of his death, and for the defense to try to instill reasonable doubt in the jurors' minds.
Okay, so wait a minute.
I agree
before
with
you,
that
go,
he
Ms.
wouldn't be
Ms.
doing
Ms. Sherry, uh-huh. before you go in, I have to ask him, since he's a retired police officer, sir? Retired, right?
Yeah, I'm retired.
Okay, question. What was his reason? So did anywhere in the video, did you see him resisting arrest?
Yes.
You did?
I saw 20 minutes of it. He was resisting fiercely. He wasn't trying to hit anybody. His hands were handcuffed. But he simply refused to go into the squad car and sit down. He was still a big, strong
man.
Because
he was claustrophobic. He was claustrophobic. And he said
well, whatever the reason, he's resisting.
Okay.
When a person is claustrophobic, that takes over a certain thing in your mind.
It doesn't matter.
The police are not required to give suspects sedatives in order to get them under control. They're not authorized or qualified to do such a thing.
Listen.
He was resisting for whatever reason.
I noticed.
He was resisting.
I noticed after Eric Garner, the rules and the language in terms of resisting arrest changed. Now, I could be wrong on that, but it was a big issue when it came down to what is resisting and what isn't. I think if you really look at it, you know, maybe Eric Garner was doing more resisting than actually George Floyd was, and he wasn't even trying to fight. He just didn't want to be handcuffed. He didn't want this guy jumping on him. Because they already knew about Eric Garner in the neighborhood. That's not their first encounter. Now, when I look at the video, when it comes down to George Floyd was scared. And see, my issue is with anyone with a badge, and then we're talking, and I've dealt, my job has taken me many places, spoke to many retired cops that are currently on the job. Whatever happened to compassion, whatever happened to asking, whatever happened to trying to find out or trying to help, the situation
they're supposed
before
to learn
you get
how
automatically
to
hurt.
Escalate a situation. You're supposed to know that.
There's no de-escalation. There's no de-escalation.
But that's what you're being trained to do.
Listen.
23 minutes? How long are they supposed to get the guy to get in the car? 23
listen.
Minutes.
Okay,
23
which is
minutes,
people complaining
now
that
they got
that's
no police officers to respond to emergency.
Training for. But this is what you have training for.
I have a question.
You want police to respond to emergency? You want to spend an hour
or
two on a suspect that doesn't want to get in the car?
There was no emergency.
I'm sorry, I'm going to ask my
You're
question
talking about a
first.
Account
oh, wait, how do you know there wasn't an emergency? You know what the dispatcher's schedule
was? It was a $20 bill. They said the dude
wait a minute, no. What other
bill?
Calls that were backed up for these units that were on the scene that had to handle him and couldn't respond to other calls while they're trying to deal with him? They're not anticipating, I'm sure, that he's going to be dead. I'm really pretty sure they weren't anticipating his death.
Larry, did you say your name is Larry?
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Larry.
Okay, so Larry, I have a question for you. From what you're saying, you seem to be able to understand and sympathize with Chauvin. So as an officer, and you said you're retired, so you're putting your...
Well, I don't know if I sympathize with him, but go ahead.
Okay. My question is, do you have a problem with how he handled it? Because... what I saw was George Floyd was not worked up until they tried to put him in the car. And that's when he started having what I saw seemed to be a panic. I'm sorry, it seemed to be a panic attack. And
actually, he had the panic attack when the officer went up to his car when he was still sitting in his car. No, he had a panic attack.
Larry, I let you finish. Can I finish, please?
Another time, please.
Thank you, Larry. What I saw was he started to have a panic attack when he was getting in the car, and that's when he started to resist. That's when they had problems, because I did see the 27 minutes. I saw him going in and out the store. I saw them walk up to the car with their guns drawn, put your hands on the wheel. He got out. They roughly put the handcuffs on him, and he walked ahead of them. They weren't dragging him. They weren't fighting with him. He walked ahead of them. He sat down on the side of the street. He got back up on his own. He walked across. It wasn't until they tried to put him in the squad, and he said, "I am claustrophobic. I can't breathe." And that's when the resistance, the panic attack happened. So if you're saying that you're a police officer and you're retired, how they talked about de-escalating the situation, I'm assuming you were trained similar. You didn't see any opportunity to de-escalate from him getting
okay,
in the squad
again,
to him
that was
dying?
His second. That was his second panic attack.
I'm sorry, did you hear my question?
His first panic attack when the officers approached him in his car. You say you saw the video. I did too. When they approached him in the car and he wouldn't put his hands on the wheel, and they told him to get his hands on the wheel, and then the officer drew his firearm, and he continued to become, you could clearly see he was at the very least extremely agitated. At the very least. I'd say he was on the verge of panic, if not outright panicking, even before he left his own car. Now, I would submit to you, knowing what I know about human nature and human psychology over 26 years, people do work themselves into a frenzy. They can work themselves into a frenzy just from going to panic, then coming down again enough to get out of the car, cooperate with the officers, then realize they're on the verge of being arrested and being put into the squad cars. That's the only way they got to transport them. They don't have a fully equipped hospital wagon with all the with a defibrillator and intravenous drugs and Narcan and everything else. They don't have that. They got a squad car.
So
that's what
they
use to transport a suspect who's been arrested for passing counterfeit bills.
He
worked himself into that frenzy in the knowledge that he was about to get arrested, in the fact that he knew he was about to be arrested. And when he was confronted with it, it just bust out.
Well, sir,
the
only reason why I somewhat disagree with you is because I don't think it was just the fear of being arrested. I think it's the fear of being shot, killed. Because my thing is, what was the purpose of pulling out the firearm? Like, all
right,
you're in law enforcement. You're in law enforcement, right? What was the purpose of pulling a firearm? Because I carry a gun for a living.
Okay.
So
what
was the reason for him engaging?
I'll tell you why I did it. This is why I did it. I never shot anybody. 22. I pulled my gun on a lot of people, and here's the reason: you go up to a car. I was a firearms instructor. I studied cases of police shootings where police officers had to shoot suspects, and they got shot and killed themselves. When you cannot see a suspect's hands, and he does not immediately comply with your orders to put his hands on the steering wheel, that should automatically trigger a red flag in any officer, particularly when you're going to confront them and or possibly arrest them for a felony. It is part of standard police training to be prepared to draw your firearm if you perceive a potential deadly imminent threat. Now, that officer did because he did not show his hands immediately. But you notice, when he did see his hands and that they were empty, he immediately holstered his firearm.
But you, all right.
He got the call for passing a $20 counterfeit.
It's still a felony. You don't know what this guy, we don't know what other things are on. I've arrested people for the most disorderly conduct, and they got warrants for murder on them in other states.
But, Larry, you had to find that out. If someone called you.
Yes, you do, and you don't know. This is what we're trying to tell you.
Sorry.
You have no way of knowing. You default to the air of to the side of caution.
Larry,
that's if you want to stay uninjured. And
then,
by the way, that makes it less likely you'll have to shoot the suspect.
Ladies first. Larry, we're not going to talk over each other. So when I talk, I would like you to let me talk, just like I allow you to. Okay?
All right. I'm saying this.
So my question, Larry, is: if someone called you and they said, look, I think this kid tried to pass a $20 bill, and it's a forfeiture. Would you come up to the person and pull your gun out?
No. Everything is circumstance-dependent.
Okay.
What other circumstances are available to my knowledge? No, not just for someone saying, I've got a bill, and you might have to arrest him for a felony counterfeiting or passing a counterfeit bill. No, I'm not going to pull my gun up, but everything is circumstance-dependent. Are there other circumstances that might cause me to pull my firearm, which have nothing to do with the counterfeit bill? Furtive behavior, reaching in his pocket, refusing to obey orders. Turning away from me when I tell him to continue to face me. Any number of things might cause me to... I'm not going to go up there like some kind of blank slate with no experience, no knowledge, no nothing. You only wanted for a counterfeit bill. There's no reason whatsoever you think that I just might want to kill you or hurt you.
What?
No, it doesn't work that way. It shouldn't ever work that way with a police officer who, A, doesn't want to get hurt or injure himself, or, B, doesn't want to hurt or injure a suspect. You want to put them maximally at a tactical disadvantage. That's the whole point of the way police officers behave and the way they do, to put the suspect at a tactical disadvantage.
But
so you don't have to shoot him.
But the thing is this. What we have here, and I'm sure Mr. Larry would agree, we have a sucker with a badge. Because there's officers like you, Mr. Larry, and others that would have handled it totally different. Totally different. But I don't think he was thinking. I think he was probably more reacting more in the brute way that he's been acting, you know, with all the other little complaints that he's racked up. So what we have is a sucker with a badge and that needs to be dealt with. Simple and plain.
Well,
I might agree with that. Sure.
I do think that Chauvin was put into a community that he's afraid of. He's not able to have community policing. Even though he worked in the community, he is scared of the people. He doesn't know how to approach them in a way to de-escalate because he's not able to interact with them.
Well, can I say something? I'm sorry, Jerry.
You're absolutely right, Mr. Jerry.
No, go ahead.
May I say something?
No,
We all watched the trial, and what I'm seeing the defense was doing within the last week or two since I've been watching it is that basically the questions that he was asking some of the higher-up officers like lieutenants or whoever, basically he was trying to say that because the witnesses were heckling him, that may have been the reason why he was kind of like, I guess, distracted from what he was doing, and that's why he was did what he did. So it's basically, once again, that he's trying to, of course, because he's a defense lawyer, he has to defend him, but one thing is, as an officer, you should be used to this by now of witnesses heckling or saying things or what, but that's going to happen, and you know we live in a world now where everybody's going to pull out their phone, you know this. So if you know all of this, once again, you should have known how to de-escalate that situation and not get, once again, you're sitting on somebody's neck. Every lieutenant and everybody that worked in that works in that department had said, and it was several of them. Now, Ms. Cherry, I know that you've been watching. I know you've heard it too. They all said that right there is not what's taught in the training. It's never been taught in the training to a point, but never like that. And all of them said that, and these are people that have been there for decades, not just a couple of months or however long he's been on the Chauvin's been on force. These are people that have been there way before he even got there, and they said that has never been taught.
Well, I saw the Minneapolis police chief's testimony yesterday, and I would agree with you. If he had his knee on his neck, that is not the way he was trained to do that restraint. It's called a proximal maximal restraint. And if he had done it that way, then he was not trained to do it that way. That's the bone of contention, whether or not he had the knee on the neck. And even the police chief yesterday said that from the angle that the defense showed, he would agree that Chauvin's knee was not on his neck. Now, does it mean that at other times during the incident, he didn't have the knee on the neck? He may very well have had so. But remember, reasonable doubt is the criteria. Reasonable doubt. again, I agree with you. If he had the knee on the neck, then he was not applying the technique properly. So I'd agree with you there. That's what this whole trial is about. Did he?
Right, I understand that. So, but once again, as an officer, you should. This is something that you should know. Once again, your training, de-escalation. You have to do that. And these, a lot of officers are not doing it. But this is in your training.
So,
remember, Chauvin's on trial. Not all the officers in the Minneapolis Police Department, even though that may be a societal view, Chauvin is the one on trial for his freedom.
Did he do it? Not other officers. Did Chauvin do it to George Floyd, and he's not even here. So it's like they're more concerned about him than
Chauvin. He's not on trial. You can't try him. We're not trying him.
We're giving facts that might lead to
Chauvin's innocence. Did he cause his death?
The thing is, George Floyd is being tried in the court of public opinion. His name, dirt is being thrown on his name to take away his humanity. He's being called a druggie. He's being called everything disrespectful but a human being.
Absolutely.
He's being called everything else but a man, but a father, but a child of God. He's being called everything else derogatory but a human being. So once you take that label away, then it's okay for Derek Chauvin or anyone with a badge to basically do what they do to other people because they are no longer considered human because they smoke drugs or they shoot up drugs or they beat their kids or something. They're no longer a human being. So you have every right to do whatever you want to do, and this is why it's not about Derek Chauvin. It's more about George Floyd. So everybody can say, yeah, he did the right thing. He took another piece of trash out of this world.
Well, if we want to try Derek Chauvin in accordance with the narrative of police brutality and racism and corruption and any number of other factors, well, I guess that we don't have a trial of an individual, whether or not his guilt is there beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, I would like to ask you, would you disallow such a defense? In the case of a publicly heated trial, would you disallow such evidence to be introduced on the defendant's side? Evidence that is pertinent to what was the cause of the individual's death. Would you disallow it if it does, cast a shadow over the individual who is the victim? Would you disallow such evidence at trial?
Absolutely.
I will say this. I think the defense attorney is doing an excellent job. What he's doing is, he's distracted from the facts, and he's placing the focus on the victim. We're now saying, well, George Floyd was a bad person, and even though he died at the hands of this guy, he was dirty. You know, he's a drug addict. He might have been dealing drugs. He was, you know, running around and doing this. So instead of us focusing, like I said, on what Chauvin did, and Larry, I actually have a technical question to ask you because you have experience. I couldn't understand why once he got in the car, they had to pull him back out. And I know you said you're law enforcement. If the whole idea was he was resisting arrest and they got him in, why did they pull him back out?
Because he stiffened to the point where they couldn't even close the door. Remember, he's 6'7". He's still a big, strong guy. This guy was a former athlete. You can see he was quite muscular. He was still strong. He might have had all these health problems, but he was still strong. And believe me, having been in dozens of these situations where you got to restrain somebody, it could be hard to get a 120-pound little woman under control when they're on drugs and hysterical. To say nothing of a 6'7", 200-plus-pound man, former athlete, who's panicky, scared as hell, and on drugs to get him to sit. They could not close the door.
So, Larry, are you saying that physically he was too big to fit in a small car?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's extremely difficult. Here's what I think they wanted to do. I think, but first of all, he said he couldn't breathe and he wanted to get out. So they took him out. But I thought maybe they would apply something to him, either a pain compliance technique if he was still capable of feeling pain. I think that's what they should have been using. That's what I would have been using. It's where you use a pressure point. like under the jaw with the mastoid process or brachial stun or something to make him hurt so he'll comply. That is allowed under the National Institute of Justice Use of Force Continuum Guidelines. That's what I would have done. I would have tried to make him feel some pain so he would comply with my orders to get in, sit down, so I could buckle him up.
Wait, you would have done that. I'm sorry, Larry. You would have done that while he was in the car or after you pulled him out the car? And
either or would have been okay for me. It would have been better to do it while I was in the car. But you got to remember, tasers frequently do not work. I have seen tasers fail that were fully charged on multiple occasions. So they don't always work either. And pain compliance techniques don't always work either when someone's on drugs or they're on drunk. They just don't feel the pain.
I'm curious about something.
Right,
I'm curious.
Mika.
Now, in regards to this, if the roles were reversed, if this were Floyd on Chauvin's neck, would we actually be going through all of this right now? And the reason why I ask this before we even go there is because a couple of years ago, Muhammad Noor killed that lady in her backyard. Black cop kills a white lady in the backyard. It wasn't even a question. He got 12 years off the bat. After a week or two, he got sentenced to 12 years. Off the bat.
Let me ask you
My question is this. Would we really be going through all of this if roles were reversed?
I have to ask you, why does Floyd have his knee on Chauvin's neck?
You should be asking, why does Chauvin have his knee on Floyd's neck? Do you understand what I'm saying?
He was attempting to restrain him. That's clear to me.
But he was in cuffs, though.
Now, why, in your scenario, does Floyd have his knee on Chauvin's neck?
Because he's trying to restrain him the same way. Do you understand?
Floyd is trying to arrest Chauvin. What is he trying to arrest Chauvin for?
The same exact thing. Notice my question. Everything that Chauvin said about Floyd, roles are reversed. Floyd is doing this to Chauvin.
So wait a minute. Floyd is a
now,
police
my
officer
question,
in your
again,
scenario now.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, I'd say the same thing. Everything I'm saying, I say exactly the same thing. I mean exactly. I wouldn't change a whit, not a thing. I would say exactly the same thing.
So, Larry, but you're missing my question. My question was, would we really be going through all of this now if Roe were reversed?
I don't know. I think we would. If community activists got involved in it, yeah.
You really believe
absolutely
that? So if that was the case, why is it that Muhammad Noor went to jail with no problems?
Muhammad Noor had a trial, and evidence was introduced at trial of his conduct.
But why is it the evidence of Chauvin?
He was not convicted of murder. He was convicted of manslaughter.
So why is it that Chauvin's depraved heart manslaughter?
He had a trial.
So why is it that Chauvin's information isn't brought up here? You understand what I'm saying? Do you not see the problem with the legal system?
Very simple. Yeah, no, I see it because I'm going to answer. Those are good questions and they deserve an answer. Let me answer. They did not introduce a lot of prior bad behavior by Noor either at trial because the trial judge felt it'd be unduly prejudicial in much the same manner as the evidence that was excluded against Chauvin would not be allowed at trial. They did it the same way. There wasn't as much with Noor that could be introduced because he wasn't on the force that long. But they did exclude certain evidence as being unduly prejudicial.
Isn't it also true, Larry, that they're working on a police reform bill right now to reverse that so that these officers' past records can be released? That's my understanding.
Well, in New York, it's already been done.
They're working on it.
Oh, yeah, they're doing it. They're just trying to get rid of qualified immunity in New York and many other places.
It's already done in New York. New York already has qualified immunity.
Yeah, and I guarantee you,
gone.
You're not going to get many people who want to be police officers in that case. I can bloody well guarantee you.
New York can just slide in the darkness
because there's not going to be any cops.
Now,
just
Mr. Larry,
hiring vigilantes.
Sorry, let me ask you a question, Larry. Have you ever lived in New York?
Wait a minute, hold on.
I visited it,
and
I never want to live there.
No, 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 I said, have you ever lived in New York?
No, I've never lived in New York because I never want to.
Wait,
before you make a judgment about somewhere.
Wait a minute. I got you, Mika. I got you. Got you, Ms. Cherry. Got you. Check this out. So, Mr. Larry, I love what you just said. Once they get rid of qualified immunity, a lot of people are not going to want to be cops. So what does that say?
Because
now
there is
now,
no
now
way.
You're reading out,
there
now you're
is
reading out
no
the
way.
From the real men and women from the couch.
No, sir.
Yes,
that's not
are.
It at all.
Yes, you are.
Having been the subject of 6 lawsuits in my career, 6.
Okay.
Count them, 6.
Okay.
Every one of which was dismissed, every single one, because the Attorney General of the state of Illinois defended me in them because he saw that I had every reason to do what I did when I used force. But I was 6 years. There is no way a cop who does his duty and has to deal with resistant, violent suspects is not going to be sued in his career. It just cannot happen. Because a lot of these, especially in Chicago, see, I was a state copper. In Chicago, they sue routinely. Now, a lot of cases are justified for the suit because they got some brutal-ass Chicago cops on there. But there's a lot of suits that are just jive. And believe me, if a cop's doing his job and he has to fight or resist and stuff, there's no way that given the atmosphere in a place like Chicago where they just expect an easy payday just to make the case go away because they don't want to spend the legal fees in court, they'll come up with a $10,000 settlement all day long in places like Chicago and New York.
Wait, I got to tell you right now, I'm from New York, born and raised, from the hood. And let me tell you something, a lot of the cops that came into my neighborhood literally was just there to frick people up. No doubt about it. Because now you're going to listen to someone that grew up in that atmosphere, that got themselves out of that atmosphere, that goes back there and still sees what goes on. Okay?
But you can't sit there and say that it's not. You don't make a blanket assertion.
All right,
you examine each case individually.
You're making it because New York is listening. First of all, New York being what it is, it's not as bad as everybody makes it out to be. It's really not. And it hasn't been. A lot of that has been nothing more than political bullshit. A lot of the cops that patrol areas like Queens, Brooklyn, and the Boogie, 9 times out of 10, what they don't tell you is that when something goes down, you got the residents in that neighborhood that are actually protecting the fucking cops. That's what you don't know.
I'm not doubting that. I went to New York as part of a delegation after 9/11, and New York coppers were very nice to us, and all the people in New York were very nice to us, because I'm sure everybody was on their best behavior. But at the same time, I don't have any doubt that many of the stories of police crush. Remember that guy in the 77th Precinct that was doing cocaine off the dashboard of his car? I know about all that stuff. I know
that
about the Rampers Division in Los Angeles Police Department, the Rampers Division, the crash unit in Rampers. They was corrupt as the day is long. I know there are cops like that. But for you to say that every single allegation against the police is true and justified, or even most of them, is simply not true either. You got to look at every case as an individual case and examine it for the truth or falsehood of the assertions and the evidence that therein.
And the majority of them, because of qualified immunity, they have gotten away with a lot of shit.
But wait a minute. I have to say something about, and I guess in my observation, it doesn't have to be right or wrong. But to me, and I don't want you to have to co-sign anything, Mr. Larry. Just take it for what it is. To me, Mr. Larry sounds like an intelligent black man who's been through his share of shit, and he know how to play the game, and he cover his ass. That's what it sounds like. And I get where he's coming from, you know, on both ends of the spectrum. The whole thing is, it's just that sometimes we have to kind of put ourselves in other people's shoes. I mean, yes, this is a sensitive subject, you know, whether it's George Floyd or anyone else, somebody we know or just in the hood in general. But one thing we have to realize, there is a double standard when it comes to policing. My kid's mother was a cop, And she told me, as a black woman on the force, there is a double standard when it comes to white cops and when it comes to black cops. Simple and plain. So we cannot sit here and ignore the fact that there is a double standard when it comes to that badge, and there's a double standard when it comes to the law. Because it's not going to cut you the same way it's going to cut them. So if you don't know how to play the game, then maybe you need to step off the board.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I'll make a confession here right now. There's a lot of times I hated that job. I swear to God, I hated the politics. Sometimes I hated the corruption. And I'm talking about at all levels of the government involved. I hated it. I mean, I despised it. The only thing that kept me in it was the good things that you could do from time to time with others, the camaraderie you felt with your fellow officers, and the gratitude of people in the public who thought you'd done them a solid favor. That was the only thing that kept me in that job, because I swear to God, sometimes I hated it. So believe me, don't think for a moment that I look at any of it as a bed of roses. It's a dirty, nasty job. It's like sausage making, man. Everybody likes the way the sausage tastes, but ain't nobody out there wants to see how it's made. It's ugly. And so it frequently is and was police work, even when you do it right.
Absolutely.
And everybody lies to you. I mean, everybody lies to you. The victims lie to you. The perpetrators lie to you. Your bosses lie to you. And the politicians lie more than any damn body else.
I ain't going to disagree with that one, because them motherfuckers love serving up trouble.
Yeah.
It's disgusting sometimes. But, hey, I tell you one thing, though. If police work had been... that atmosphere against the police had been the way it was, the way it is now, then when I went into police work in 1978, there is no way on God's green earth I would have been a police officer. I'm a damn good auto mechanic, and I would have done that instead.
But see, when you started, things were different, way different.
They were.
It was a different standard. You know, your weapons were different.
They were going
through
it, too.
Different. You know, it was different. Now...
Let me ask you a question.
Absolutely.
Not to rile up any feathers, because you know I don't like to do that or anything. Shut up,
guys.
Shut up.
You're right.
Let me ask you something, Mr. White. Ain't no one asked you. Shut up, Brother B. Mr. White, let me ask you a question. Now, this is totally off topic, but I'm just curious. I want your take on this. This whole thing that happened January 6th and the police officers from Marion Prison throughout the country that was involved. What do you feel about those individuals that actually took part in storming? I'm just curious.
All right, I've examined some of these complaints against these police officers. Any police officer who engaged in conduct that was riotous and illegal should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. And by the way, I am looking right now at the website from the Department of Justice where they show every single person charged in a riot. I'm looking at the charge sheets against every individual. I'm looking at their names, for instance. I'm looking at Kevin Blakely. He's charged with violations of Title Code, United States Code 18. Knowingly entering or remaining in any restricted building or grounds without lawful authority. Knowingly engaging in disorderly or disruptive conduct in any restricted building or grounds. Violent entry and disorderly conduct on Capitol grounds. There are 79 names on the sheet I'm looking at. Every single name of the person. Every single charge the U.S. attorneys bring against these people. Not one of these people, not one of them is being charged with insurrection or sedition. I just want to make that clear before I say the next thing. Not one of them. It's all various forms of disorderly conduct and riotous behavior. Now, when I've seen charges against a Secret Service, an ATF agent, another one against a Secret Service agent, and another one against a local police officer, forget from which jurisdiction. In every one of these cases, when one of them, he's an ATF agent, he observed conduct that he thought was criminal. He filmed it. After he filmed it, he turned it over to his superiors. His superiors fired him for just being at the demonstration, not for doing anything illegal, just for being there. And now he's got a lawsuit. Looks like he's going to win. So, well, first of all, you got to show me, again, I keep saying this because everything is circumstance dependent, and what are the charges and what does the charge require? If any police officer engage in riotous behavior, they should be prosecuted to the full extent of the law. That's my feeling on it.
Okay.
But don't make
do
up
believe...
something on them. Don't make
no,
up
no,
something on
I'm
them.
Not, no, I'm not saying all of that. Okay. So you do believe that they should be prosecuted. Now, here's
yes,
my next question.
No doubt.
Do you
no
believe
doubt.
They will be prosecuted?
Oh, yes. But I don't think they got any charges on an actual sworn active duty police officer. Active, no, no, it's the word I use, active duty.
No, I understand.
That anything like criminal charges are going to hold up in court. Like I said, they will get. They actually were about to charge this ATF agent for actually filming criminal behavior, turning it over to his bosses. They said he shouldn't have been at the rally. He shouldn't even been a Trump supporter.
I have a third. Now I have a third question, but no, and you're absolutely right. Anyone's political stance is their political stance. You know, I could give a shit because personally, I think both parties suck. But that's just me. Now here's my third question. If what I'm honest now,
absolutely.
If,
listen, if
qualified immunity was not a, if qualified immunity was just banished across the board prior to this incident on January 6th, do you really believe that most of these officers that were there, whatever branch of law enforcement they were in, do you think they would have actually shown up had they not had the protection of qualified immunity?
Qualified immunity does not excuse you from criminal behavior. Never has, never will.
It's not.
I know you say cops get away with things. That's true. Some do get away with things. The point of the matter is qualified immunity does not excuse you from intentional criminal behavior or negligent criminal behavior. Period.
But it's
but
not.
Larry,
the,
doesn't
it,
doesn't
it, do with
it not allow? Doesn't it not allow them to introduce your priors?
No. Again. No
so
defendant
so record,
can have
I'm
prior
sorry,
bad
Larry,
acts
Larry,
in the court
Larry,
unless there is a nexus.
Larry. What's going on?
I mean, you
my
can't introduce prior bad acts unless there's a nexus to the behavior for which you're being tried. That goes for any defendant, not just the police.
Immunity,
but,
I mean,
allows
past record introduced, even
it's
though
yes, and that's what the trial judge is supposed to determine.
I have to be able
that's
to finish.
It's sticky.
Go
ahead,
I really
go
have
finish.
To be able to finish so you can answer my questions. I don't
ahead,
know what's
go
going
ahead,
on.
Ms. Cherry, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes. We
yeah,
can
I'm
hear
sorry.
You.
Maybe
ahead.
I didn't miss part of the question, but I mean it's a pretty consistent rule.
Go ahead, Ms. Cherry.
Missing part. Well, you're definitely missing part of the question because I haven't finished asking it. But community police officers.
Hello.
You're kind of low. Your volume
yeah,
is really
low.
Really low.
Yeah, you kind of went out
yeah.
there for a moment.
Now.
Your volume is still low.
For now, good.
Qualified immunity for past actions as a police officer, even though they are directly relevant to your current action, not to be introduced. For instance, robber, and I've robbed 15 banks before, and you catch me, that would be introduced at a present case.
Yeah, that would be probably, yeah. Because that is pertinent to the issue at hand.
I'm not going to win this, am I?
No, you win it if you agree with that. If it's pertinent to the charges at hand for which you are being currently tried, then yes, it should be admitted against the defendant.
The thing is, I'm not going to be able to finish the question.
Well,
I didn't know you had more.
First of all, you keep going in and out. You keep going in and out. So as soon as you start asking the question, you go out.
Yeah, I
so,
thought you were
like,
finished.
We're waiting. Yeah, we thought you were finished. That's why we're waiting.
So my thing was they have these
there you go
priors
again.
On them. Like,
yeah, we can't really hear you. It's like
no.
Yeah, your volume is going up and down.
Yeah.
Spiking.
Yeah.
Dude, it's like it's breaking up. I don't know if it's you know.
Because you're not going to be able to hear my question. You can go ahead.
Yeah,
well, look,
saying,
okay,
I mean,
let's assume for a moment that I'm kind of getting the ballpark of what you want to get answered, and that is that, yes, if it is pertinent to the charges against them, then it should be admitted against the defendant, whether it's a police officer or any damn body else.
But yeah, in this particular instance, it's not.
But you don't have no control over that. That's the judge.
Absolutely.
The judge makes the decision. If the judge doesn't want to introduce it or allow it, then it's just not going to happen. So what are you doing? You're going to go against the
And
judge?
That's what actually bothers me about all of this because, you know, not for nothing, these two have had interactions prior to when this
don't
went
forget,
down.
That is the reason we got appeals
and
court.
They never talked about
both
that.
Prosecution and the defense. That's why we got appeals court. Trial judges make errors all the time, and they get reversed by appeals courts.
Exactly.
So if the trial judge makes an egregious error at the trial, then either the prosecution or the defense can raise a motion to bring it on appeal to an appeals court, the next higher court.
Listen, qualified immunity, doing away with that is going to hurt a lot of good cops that are trying to do the right thing. Because, see, the only people that are really abusing it are the bad cops. Those are the ones that are abusing qualified immunity. The good cops out there that are doing the right thing, that are trying to make a change, those are the ones that are going to suffer. But at the same time, what's sad about that is maybe if the good cops would have stood up and said something against the bad, but even though, as Mr. Larry said, the politics, there's certain things that you can say and certain things that you can't say. But the politics makes it bad for the good cops. And the good cops are going to lose.
For sure.
That's what's so sad about this. The good cops, the good men and women with the bad, they are going to lose.
And here's another thing, too, with getting rid of qualified immunity. But here's another problem with getting rid of qualified immunity. Now, you can take an action that, given the context and the time you have to make the decision, is not only reasonable, but in response to an imminent threat or peril, and then subsequent to you taking the action that either results in a serious injury or death of the suspect, you determine that there was, in fact, no threat, like a realistic airsoft gun with a little orange cap and the muzzle removed. He pointed it at you. It had no threat. It was empty. He couldn't have shot you with it other than maybe hit you with it. But you shoot him in anticipation of a legitimate deadly threat. Well, you in qualified immunity, then you're going to have the same sort of liability that a citizen who used deadly force against a person would have had in a similar circumstance. And, man, I'm telling you right now, given the fact that any human endeavor, any, is going to be subject to mistakes, and a lot of them, especially one, has fraught with the peril for making mistakes as police work, you ain't going to get too many people who want to be policemen. You just ain't.
I think the most important single
duty of local government is to maintain civil order.
We know that the ones that decide to be police officers will have the right set of mind when they go in. They won't be getting money. It won't be praise. It won't be to, to overcome when they were younger. It won't be a power
trip. The perks.
It's going to cut out a lot of the people that weren't qualified. Money
exactly.
for status.
Hey.
Exactly.
Hey, I'm going to let you know about all the bruises and injuries I received on that job, and my pension ain't no hoop super great shakes now, but that's okay because I didn't come on the force to get rich.
You worked in New York?
Not why
you
I
pay,
did it.
You pay in New York?
So I'm just, yeah, same thing. Well, New York, I think they get a little bit more than I'm getting in New York, but it still ain't that great either.
You should have came and worked in New York.
Depending what you
got
to go through.
You could have stabbed anywhere. You could have got money.
Yeah, well, I'm saying you're right. So I'm just saying, I mean, I knew what was going on. I'm not complaining about it because I understood what the deal was going in. But I'm saying if you're going to expose police officers to that sort of danger and liability when you ain't paying them nothing in the first place, please. I mean, you literally have to expect to find Superman up there with extrasensory perception or something. And you ain't going to get it. They're human beings. Many of them are flawed human beings. That's what the purpose of the weeding out process on hiring is supposed to be, to get rid of the ones who may be like Derek Chauvin, who I will agree with you, probably shouldn't have been a police officer.
But the problem is that their testing doesn't work. All of this psychological testing and screening
perfect.
That they go through.
Well, it's not only
it's
that.
It's not perfect. It never will be.
It's not only that. Hello, Sarge. Hello, guys.
Joe! What's up, Joe?
Hey, I'm agreeing with Sarge about 98%, but I'm not going to agree with anybody who believes that the screening process was decent. It was never intended to be decent. I'm going to say this now.
I believe it, Joe.
Here's why. And Sarge probably knows this because he does research very well. There was a police commissioner in New York called Benjamin Ward. At one time,
oh, God, I remember him.
Did you work in New York, Sarge?
Oh, heck
I'm
no.
I'm from New York. Oh, him.
No way.
Oh, okay.
Los Angeles and New York are two places I would never work as a police officer.
Yeah, well, those are danger zones, all right.
Not danger, just too much corruption, man. I couldn't deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
So Benjamin Ward ordered his human resources woman, there was a female person in charge, to reduce the screening process. In other words, to lower the scales in terms of the test. Lower it. She said no, because if you lowered it anymore, you would literally be hiring imbeciles. He ordered her to do it anyway. She said no. She got fired. So she sued him. So it's now in court. Not now. I mean, it was in court years ago.
Well, court then, yeah.
Right. So it was shown that they did not want people who had, you know, much better than average intelligence. They just wanted people who
would
follow
orders.
Yeah,
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I remember it. Yeah.
How long ago was that, Sarge?
Smart to want to be a police officer.
I didn't hear you. Sorry.
Yeah, I remember that. That said, that they literally said he was too smart to want to be a police officer.
Well, not just one particular case. It was about the fact that he ordered her to lower the standards so that the scores would be acceptable. You know, I don't know whatever the scores were. Let's say it was 85. They wanted to lower it, I'm going to guess, about 75 or so. So that would mean you would have cops who were just going to be worker drones. Do this, Sergeant Jones. Yes, sir.
Hey.
You know.
Yeah, I got news for you, man. They're lowering standards in police departments all across the nation. They are really doing it now.
Really?
If you think they were inadequate 20 years ago, wait till you see what they are now. And remember, it's being done. I hate to say it, but it's being done in the name of diversity and inclusivity.
Yes, political correctness.
I thought this was always flawed anyway because they allowed extra points if your family members were police officers or if you had military service or were given extra points on that test.
Yeah, but those are universal for anyone who meets that criteria. If you, anybody can have a person that's a police officer in the family. Anyone can be a military veteran if they were, you know, admitted into the armed forces. We're talking about things that can be transferable from anyone. I'm talking about other criteria that are exclusive only to some people. Anybody can be an athlete or have a college degree.
That's not true.
Well, I mean, if you work hard and get there.
Yeah.
I'm talking about when the characteristics are immutable.
Mm.
That's the one. That's the only thing I'm speaking of here.
Yeah, you're talking about Christ.
It is not an immutable characteristic being a veteran.
Well, yeah,
that's something you earn and do by virtue of experience and having been honorably discharged.
Mm. If the criteria of what you're talking about is universal and does not affect the primary criteria, you know, supposedly you're supposed to have brains and courage. But
exactly.
What you're telling me right now, Sarge, is kind of making me feel apprehensive because you and I had this
sliding scale for women, sliding scale for certain minorities, that sort of thing. Yeah, we know what it is. Let's be honest.
I'm not
here.
Talking about that.
We
I'm
know what's going
what,
on.
Historically, you know what they've done in the countries that have turned socialist and communist? First, they had some decent cops. Then the cops, they were kind of like what the cops were doing over the summer. You know, they were obeying orders and they were not protecting the people. So what happened? Some of them left. Some of them got fired for being dissidents. But the police, the populace, they wanted cops. So what do? The government hired the criminals to be the cops.
Yep. They sure did. I know what you're talking about. They specifically look for criminals and thugs to do the police work because those are the kinds they figure would be most politically reliable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, so I'm not looking forward to whatever the future's going to be. I'm not a Biden supporter. I don't know how many of you guys here are. Not I. Not
I support you, Joe. I support you. Damn it. I support Joe.
If I were running the sport, you mean Joe Biden or Joe me?
I'm going for Joe you.
Joe, if you were voting for me, let me tell you something. I would have gotten rid of this illegal immigration problem a long time ago. I would have had guns on the Rio Grande. Anybody steps foot inside the Rio Grande got shot.
Minefield.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I'm not kidding.
Minefield.
It's okay. Our borders. Americans deserve the first bite of the apple. We were born here. We have it. It's for us. It's not for foreigners. It's for us. We have, and while they had them, they're bringing them over. That's funny. I'm not even kidding.
It's funny to me. I'll tell you why it's funny to me, because you say all this, but yet and still you have a group of people that this country's backs was built on that are still getting treated like shit centuries later. So I'm sorry if
I
find that a bit funny.
Well, that's
illegal immigration isn't going to make it better for them. I guarantee you that.
Well, here's a funny thing, though. The immigrants that do come in, they still get treated better than we do. So, again,
yeah,
I find it funny.
How about that?
I still find it funny.
They get plane tickets on your dime. They get flown in the interior after they test positive for COVID. That knocks
yeah, and there's people that are down in
all
the South.
This dive about
yeah,
COVID.
And there's people that are in Kentucky with no teeth that are getting money from my tax dollars just as well.
That's
so,
right.
I mean, again.
That's why you should.
And they're American citizens, too. I find
yes.
it funny.
American.
Well,
I know what
find
you mean
it funny.
It's not funny, ha-ha. It's funny, pathetic. I know what you're talking yeah. about.
Thank
the
you.
The thing is that our immigrants
people,
supposed,
we got to help ourselves.
You know. No, I would have instituted some laws that would have made it very, very hard for the immigrants who are here, who do not like America, who do not assimilate, and who don't give a rat's ass about our culture. They would be deported after a few crimes, misdemeanors. Okay, that would keep them sharp. Because right now, immigrants, they don't put the garbage cans on the lid, they don't walk their dogs by the curb. They don't care about talking. They don't care about learning English.
Well,
there's
a lot of people. There's a lot of people that are doing that. That were actually born here. So I think we can put them all in a rocket ship who don't want to curb their dogs.
I have a question.
Yeah, well,
no, that's great.
Sounds pretty bad.
Civilized, regardless of whether they're here, born here or not born here, should be taught a lesson. The consequences that are accrued to illegals are none.
I'm gonna tell you what used to happen back when it was INS, you know, Immigration and Naturalization Services, and we used to arrest some illegal aliens for some various crimes. And this was like in the mid '90s, and they say, look, we're holding this guy here for this. He's in Cook County Jail right now, but you know, we've also discovered he's an illegal alien. You guys interested in him? And the first thing I would ask, and this is in the mid-90s, when it wasn't as bad as it is now. Hey, you holding him for any felonies? Nah, it's misdemeanor theft, disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, stuff like that. Nah, you can't come in there unless you got him on some kind of felony, because otherwise we ain't going to be able to deport him. When I was going to work one morning, my squad car was in the shop getting fixed. So I was driving my personal car to work, and I was going to pick it up when I got to work. And I'm driving my own personal car to work, and I got T-boned by a white van running a red light at the intersection of Taylor and Paulina Streets in Chicago. This guy kept going after he rammed me. So I kept pursuing him in my own car. It was still drivable. Fortunately, there was an off-duty railroad policeman who saw the accident, and he joined me in the pursuit. Now, we chased these guys, got them pulled over. They bailed out of the car. I went after the driver, caught him. The railroad cop went after the passenger, caught him. Brought him back. Lo and behold, they ain't got no license, got no insurance, and they can barely speak English. They're both illegal aliens. So, you know, look, it's, by agreement, since it happened in the city of Chicago, and I wasn't on duty, I called the Chicago coppers up there because they got first dibs on this case like this. So you got to call them up. They get there. If they wouldn't, and I said, here's the search. The Chicago cop looked at me and said, well, look, man, why don't you just let him pay you some money? and, you know, look the other way for it. I said, look here, man. But look, you know, you got first dibs on the table, so that's the agreement we got with your department. But if you're not going to take this, I am. And so he reluctantly took it, charged him, put him down in Cook County. They got to release OR, own recognizance, to show up, naturally, and show up back in jail. I called INS up to tell him, they didn't broadside me, I'm a cop, they didn't broadside me, and I wrecked my car. They ain't got no license, they ain't got no insurance. They didn't want interest in coming to get him when they got released on bail. And it's gotten a whole lot worse since then.
Yeah.
A whole lot worse.
On that note,
okay.
Mr. Larry.
That note. Yes.
On that note, Mr. Larry, thank you. May the universe
bless you.
You're
welcome, sir. Glad I could help.
Thank you for the insight. Mr. Joe, it's always a pleasure.
How you doing?
All right. Ms. Cherry, thank you. As usual. Mika, thank you. Oh, your bottle. And Big Red, thank you as well.
Yep.
It's been a great show. Check out our people Monday night, Absolute Truth on Blog Talk Radio, 10 p.m. And on that note, another one in the can. Everybody have a blessed week.
I
be
have
well.
Something.
Have a good night and a blessed week.
I have something I'd like to say to you guys before you leave. I have. Do you guys consider yourselves conservatives? Because I'm having the feeling that Blog Talk Radio eventually is going to experience a cancel culture, and a lot of shows may be taken off the air as a result of the new terms of service in some way. I'd like to organize an hour of power so that guys who are conservatives, libertarians, can get on a show. All the, you know, let's say four or five would be on one show, four or five talk show hosts. Half an hour devoted to one person's show, the next half hour to another person's show, next half hour to another person's show, so that people can consolidate, get together, and see what they can do.
Well, I think here we don't. I don't adhere to a political party. I just adhere to humanity.
Okay.
Keep it moving from there.
Are you still invited?
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Sure. I'm a libertarian, so I believe in the same things you do.
Oh,
it's just that everybody on Block Talk Radio is either conservative or liberal.
Oh, I got you. Hey, listen. All right, everybody, take care. Have a good one.
Hey, be safe.
Okay, good right, night, guys.
Be safe. All right, later.
Great show. Thanks a lot, guys, and good luck to all of you.
All right, you too,
good night.
Thank you.
You too, sir.
Take care. Thanks for your input.
Anytime.